Welcome to the infamous podcast, Bitch, I'm Not Well. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Brandy.
And we're invested on taking you down to Crazy Town, where we talk about crazy bitches who are truly unwell.
You're from Louisiana, so you know New Orleans is crazy, and everybody thinks it's haunted by... Pretty much every person that's ever been there haunts New Orleans.
Pretty much.
For the last about 150 years or so, there has been a ghost story about Delphine Lalaurie. People say that if you pass her house at night, you can hear people screaming and crying in pain.
Mm-mm.
That you can see a dark shadow on the balcony looking out at you.
I got chills.
Yeah. And if you're really lucky and you go inside, you may feel like you're burning to death.
No.
Yeah.
We need to go check this house out.
Yeah. Well, they have it on Haunted Tours in New Orleans. And I actually went on this walking tour with Chris. They showed the house. And I think at the time, either like Nicolas Cage owned it or something.
Did you see any of it?
No, we didn't get to go inside. And
damn.
I didn't see anything. But it was night when we passed. And I was like, uh-huh. Oh my God, this is scary.
Is it a shadow? Is it not?
I guess in New Orleans, you don't really have to do terrible things to become a ghost or have a story behind you. But this bitch was terrible. We're going to go back to 1834, but the case begins well before this date. But it ends, as far as we know, in April of 1834.
Okay.
This case was sent to me by my mother-in-law, Miss Janie.
Another one from Miss Janie.
She helps us find the craziest ones.
We love you.
If you're listening, we love you. You're the best.
Best mother-in-law Brandy ever had.
For real. I'm your only mother-in-law. Covering the really evil bitch this week, and her name was Marie Delphine Lalaurie. But it's more widely known today as Madame Lalaurie.
Lalaurie.
So Madame was a Louisiana-born socialite and serial killer known for her involvement in the torture and murder of slaves. There are several walking ghost tours in New Orleans, and Lalaurie's home is always discussed during the French Quarter tours.
Mm-hmm.
Her house is considered one of the most haunted houses in the city. And, I mean, it was a nice house, but it was creepy looking. Most of the stories that you hear, New Orleans ghost stories, are pretty sad. During the walking tour, we heard about two young lovers that were killed. The Axeman murders, which were crazy as hell.
Mm-hmm.
Jean Lafitte, we went to his bar that he supposedly haunts. It was pretty cool. Including all of these people, this bitch was evil. She was the worst out of all of these. I think even worse than the Axeman.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever heard of a nastier, more sadistic person than Madame.
Wow. Is that what we're calling her?
Madame. Okay. Delphine McCarty was born on March 19th, 1787, and was one of five children. Her father was Bartholomew Louis McCarty, and her mother was Marie-Jean Lovable. That's a cool last name. Her mother was also known as the Widow Lecomte.
Okay.
Whose marriage to Bartholomew was her second marriage. The men in Lalaurie's family had military backgrounds. Most were landowners, and her father, Louis, was knighted as the Chevalier of the Royal and Military Order of St. Louis. Also known as the Widow Lecomte, whose marriage to Bartholomew McCarty was her second marriage. The men in Lalaurie's family had military backgrounds, and most were landowners. And her father, Louis Bartholomew de McCarty, was knighted as the Chevalier of the Royal and Military Order of St. Louis.
Well.
Fancy.
Fancy schmancy.
Mm-hmm. By 1794, her family had a 1,344-acre plantation between Bartholomew and Independence, backing up to St. Claude Avenue.
Big plot.
Mm-hmm. You could easily assume that Lalaurie had a charmed life.
Of course.
Her family were prominent members of the New Orleans white Creole community.
Oh, okay.
And we Googled this, and it was hard to find an answer, but what we think white Creole community is mixtures of English, French, and Spanish to make a Creole. But we're not 100% sure, so if you know the right answer, you can let us know.
Please do.
On June 11th, 1800, Delphine McCarty married Don Raymond de Lopez Angulo, a high-ranking Spanish officer at the St. Louis Cathedral in New Orleans. Could you imagine getting married there?
No, it's gorgeous.
It is. It's so pretty.
I don't know how it was back in 1800, but...
By 1804, Don Ramon had risen to the position of Consul General for Spain and Louisiana. Mm-hmm. Also in 1804, Delphine and Don traveled
Don
to Spain.
Don Raymond Noodle.
Her husband, they went to Spain. Accounts of their trip differ. Grace King wrote in 1921 that the trip was Don's military punishment and that Delphine met the Queen, who was impressed by Delphine's beauty.
Oh, was she pretty?
I mean, she was okay in her picture. I think Grace is just trying to make her feel better.
I gotcha.
Stanley Arthur's 1936 report differed. He stated that on March 26, 1804, Don was recalled to the court of Spain to take his place at court as befitting his new position.
Okay.
But that Don never arrived in Spain because he died in Havana. During the voyage, Delphine gave birth to a daughter named Marie Borgia Delphine Lopez Angula. De la Candelaria.
De la Candelaria.
Oh, look, they nicknamed her Borquita.
Oh, look.
We're going to go with that one.
Borquita.
Borquita. Delphine and her daughter returned to New Orleans afterwards. In June 1808, Delphine married Jean Blanc, a prominent banker, merchant, lawyer, and legislator. Man, this dude was busy.
And an easier name to spell.
Yes, a lot easier. Thank you for marrying someone with an easy name.
Poor Borquita. How's she going to fill out her ACTs?
She ran out of room.
There's not enough
spaces.
Write it on the back.
At the time of the marriage, Blanc purchased a house at 409 Royal Street in New Orleans for the family. And it later became known as Villa Blanc.
Nice.
Delphine had four more children with Blanc named Marie-Louise Pauline. God, I hope these are better than the first one. Okay, so the first one is Marie-Louise Pauline. Okay. The second one is Louise Marie Laure.
Okay.
Third is Marie-Louise Jean.
Okay.
And the fourth is Jean-Pierre Paulin Blanc.
Jean-Pierre Paulin Blanc.
I was wondering if she would resort to like Marie number one, Marie number two, Louise number one, Louise number two.
Yeah.
Or you could just point and say, hey, you, come here. And I mean, one out of five's got to come, right?
Just call them all Marie. Marie, they've all got here. Marie in their name.
Yeah. So. Might as well.
Except for the last one.
I don't know.
Jean-Pierre.
Her second husband died in 1816, and Delphine married her third husband, physician Leonard-Louise Nicholas Lalaurie. I know.
She's like, going through them.
I would be nervous. Like, was it an accident that your first and second husband died?
So she has five kids total?
Yes.
Now. Okay. Yeah.
He was a physician, and they were married on June 25th, 1825. Her third husband was known to be much younger than her. Ooh. Robbing the cradle.
Or
he is robbing the old folks home, whichever way you prefer to do.
I like it that way.
I like it that way. Because he was younger, Delphine was referred to as La Cougar.
Uh-huh.
See? Even back then. Now I'm just messing with you. Okay. But that would have been really funny.
I was like, I didn't know they named that.
Madame Lalaurie bought property at 1140 Royal Street, which she managed in her own name with little involvement from her husband. And by 1832, had built a three-story mansion.
Wow.
Complete with attached slave quarters.
Well, you know, in the time, that was how it was. She didn't think anything of it. You know, in some of these mansions, they got houses for their help.
On April 10th, 1834, a fire broke out in the Lalaurie mansion. Firefighters were dispatched to the home, and while they were trying to suppress the flames, they found seven slaves inside the home.
Oh, no.
The firefighters later told a local newspaper that these seven people were more horribly mutilated than anyone could imagine.
What? Yep. From the fire?
Mm-mm. The seven people found trapped in the house were rescued by firefighters and brought to the Cabildo, which was a Spanish colonial building nearby. They were mutilated because she would do experiments on them.
What?
Yeah. She would try stretching out their neck.
What?
Or cutting off their ears and stuff and sticking them to other parts of their body.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Nobody knows 100% for sure what she's done, but they said based on how these seven people looked when they were rescued, it was really bad there.
Oh my God.
Really, really bad.
It makes me want to throw up.
And there are differing stories and opinions of how Delphine treated the people she enslaved between 1831 and 1834. In 1838, Harry Martino wrote down events and occurrences that supposedly happened before the evil bitch was brought down. Her writings and descriptions are secondhand information, but from what others report, I'm going to say she's not far from the truth.
Mm-hmm.
She was told that Lalaurie's enslaved people were known to be singularly haggard and wretched.
What does that mean?
Like they were miserable, they were skinny, and
like
they were not well kept. They were treated very bad. Okay. They were starved.
Like
they
as opposed to other slaves.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, wretched when compared to other enslaved individuals. Mm. While in public, Lalaurie was said to usually be polite to Black people and attentive to her own enslaved people's health concerns. Okay.
Nice.
That's like two, like completely different ends, but okay.
Mm-hmm.
Between 1830 and 1834, there is documentation of 12 enslaved people dying while working for Lalaurie at her mansion.
Oh my God. Okay, yeah. And this is not a mansion on a plantation. This is a mansion within the city of New Orleans on Royal Street.
Yeah. You were smack dab in the middle. Yeah, like, back in the day, there
you
was
really
still...
have no, like, this is not people getting run over by bush hogs and tractors.
Yeah,
and
these are only the 12 that are reported, because there is rumors that there was a lot. We do not know the exact cause of these people's deaths, just that they lived with Lalaurie and they had died. The following are the documented individuals that died at her home. Mm-hmm. A woman named Bonnie was 30 years old and died on February 7th, 1833. She was a cook and laundress at the Lalaurie mansion. Her four children also died, and here is their information. Juliet, age 13. Her date of death is February 21st, 1833. Florence, age 10, her date of death was February 16th, 1831. And Jules, age 6, his date of death is May 29th, 1833. And the final child, Lynette, he was 4 years old when he died on August 31st, 1833.
Okay, so February the 7th, then the 21st of 1833. So the first one was Florence, age 10. Her death was in February of 1831. Then she went kind of cuckoo machu in 1833, February the 7th.
And I mean, they are all one family, but if it's just this family that was sick and died, there would be other people besides just this family.
Damn. The little boy was the last one, 4 years old.
And his six-year-old brother, they were both alive after their mother and older sisters had died.
Mm-hmm.
So court records from that period show that Lalaurie freed two captive enslaved people. She freed Jean-Louis in 1819 and DeVince in 1832.
I wonder what they did to deserve that.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they knew something. They could blackmail her. Martino wrote that public rumors about her mistreatment of slaves at the Royal Street residence were sufficiently widespread, so much so that a local lawyer was dispatched to the property to remind Lalaurie of the laws for the upkeep of enslaved people. During this visit, the lawyer found no evidence to suggest wrongdoing or mistreatment of enslaved peoples by Lalaurie. Martino also wrote that there were other tales of Lalaurie's cruelty that were whispered amongst New Orleans residents around 1836. One of these stories is that after the lawyer made a visit to her home, one of Lalaurie's neighbors saw an 8-year-old enslaved girl fall to her death from the roof of the mansion while trying to avoid punishment from a whip-wielding Lalaurie. The girl's body was subsequently buried on the mansion ground.
Oh, so I guess maybe she did have more than...
According to what I found, her grave is not marked. So if she did die and was buried, they don't know where she was buried at on the property. And they think that there was quite a few others that were killed.
Oh, I'm sure.
And then just buried on the property with no type of markings.
I'm sure.
According to Martino, this incident led to an investigation of the Lalaurie's in which they were found guilty of illegal cruelty and forced to forfeit 9 enslaved people of the household. Now, back then, they treated them pretty bad. Can you imagine how bad she was treating them to be found
to be treating them worse? Bad?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was wondering if there was only 9 enslaved people on her property or if they only took some of them away and left others. Like, how do you decide which 9 get to leave, or do you take everyone? I don't know.
I would hope everyone.
I would hope they took all of them. Unfortunately, these 9 enslaved people were brought back to the Lollarays by a relative and thus returned to the mansion.
Oh my God, poor things. Can you imagine that maybe we're going to make it, maybe we're free, and then they bring them right back?
Similarly, Martino recounted stories that Lollaray kept her cook starved and chained to the kitchen stove.
Oh, wow.
Beating her daughters when they attempted to feed themselves or others.
Oh.
On April 10th, 1834, when
she was beating her own daughters?
Yeah, it was her daughters.
She would beat her own daughter?
For being too nice to the slaves because she's fucking hateful.
Oh.
Yeah, they were trying to feed the cook that she was starving and had chained to the kitchen stove so she couldn't leave.
She is evil.
On April 10th, 1834, a fire broke out in the Royal Street Mansion, beginning in the kitchen. When police and fire marshals reached the residence, they found a 70-year-old cook chained to the stove by her ankle.
Oh, poor thing.
The cook later said that she had set the fire as a suicide attempt because she feared being punished, stating that slaves taken to the uppermost room never came back.
Oh, God.
So this woman would have rather died by being burnt alive.
I was going to say, if I'd be chained to a stove 24/7 and not allowed to eat and all that, I'd set that bitch on fire too.
And supposedly the upstairs or
uppermost room
was like her experiment laboratory.
Holy
that
crap.
She would nail people to the wall while they were alive.
Oh.
Like hang them by their hair and try to stretch out their necks or their limbs.
Jesus.
Like it was.
Who helped her with this? She could not have done this on her own.
I have no idea. It got pretty bad from some accounts of what she was doing. It was reported in the New Orleans Bee on April 11th, 1834, that bystanders responding to the fire attempted to enter the quarters of those enslaved to ensure that everyone had been evacuated.
Mm-hmm.
The Lollarays refused to give these people the keys to unlock the enslaved people's doors to get them out of harm's way. Those present at the home when it was on fire said that the bystanders broke down the doors to the quarters and found seven people more or less horribly mutilated.
Oh.
Some of the ways these people were found were one was being suspended by the neck, their limbs apparently stretched and torn from one extremity to the other.
Oh my God.
And this person claimed to have been in prison for some months.
Oh, about, ugh.
So he or she had been tortured for months before they were found.
God.
One of those who entered the premises was Judge Jean-Francois, how do I say the last one? Canonge, who was deposed during the investigation of Lollaray's enslaved people. He stated that he saw one woman in the home wearing an iron collar and an old woman with a very deep wound on her head that was so weak she couldn't even walk.
Oh, God.
How do you leave without taking these people with you? I mean, they're human.
Yeah. Not to her, they weren't.
So Judge Jean said that when he questioned Lollaray's husband about those enslaved on the property, he was told in a respectful manner that some people had better stay at home rather than come to others' houses to dictate laws and meddle with other people's business.
Oh, did he now?
So that's
he?
Yeah.
It was meddling.
It's meddling. Don't meddle in my business. Mm-hmm. You probably didn't even know what was going on. Your wife probably chained you up too. Mm-hmm. I really wish the next thing he said was that Lollaray's husband was then bitch slapped. But unfortunately, that is not what happened.
No, not what happened. Damn it.
Another version of this story circulating in 1836 and recounted by Martineau added that the enslaved people were emaciated, showed signs of being lashed with a whip. Some were bound in restrictive postures and wore spiked iron collars, which kept their heads in a static position. How did this sadistic woman even think to do this to people? Like, how messed up in her head did she have to be to come up with this shit? In a past life, was she an executioner?
I don't know.
So when the discovery of the abused and enslaved people became widely known, a mob of local citizens attacked the Royal Street Mansion and demolished and destroyed everything upon which they could lay their hands.
Well, damn.
A sheriff and his officers were called to disperse the crowd, but by the time the mob left, the property had sustained major damage with scarcely anything remaining but the walls.
Holy moly, people was pissed.
They was mad, man.
Big mad.
The New Orleans Advertiser reported several weeks after the evacuation of Lollaray's quarters of her victims, they claimed that two of the enslaved people found in the mansion had died following their rescue.
Hmm.
It added, "We understand that in digging the yard, bodies have been disinterred and the condemned well that was inside the mansion's grounds had been uncovered. Others, particularly that of a child, were found." These claims were repeated by Martineau in her 1838 book, Retrospect of Western Travel, where she placed the number of unearthed bodies at two, including the child that had fallen off the roof. I wonder if those two include the entire family that they found buried on her ground.
I don't know.
Lalaurie's life after the 1834 fire is not well documented. She tried to keep a low profile.
You think?
So she wouldn't have to suffer the consequences of her actions. Martino wrote in 1838 that she fled New Orleans during the mob violence that followed the fire, taking a coach to the waterfront and traveling by boat to Mobile, Alabama. From Mobile, she then traveled to Paris. While Lalaurie was living in exile in Paris with her mother and two sisters, Pauline and Lalaurie, her son Pauline Blanc wrote on August 15, 1842 to his brother-in-law, Auguste de Lassus, stating that Lalaurie was serious about returning to New Orleans and had thought about doing so for a long time. He wrote in the same letter that he believed Lalaurie's mother never had any idea about the reason her daughter left New Orleans. Despite Lalaurie's bad mood and her determination to return, the disapproval of her children and other relatives had apparently been enough for her to cancel her plans.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm glad her children didn't take after her.
No doubt.
The circumstances of Lalaurie's death are also unclear. In 1888, George Washington Cabell recounted a popular but unsubstantiated story that Lalaurie had died in France in a boar hunting accident.
A boar hunting accident?
Oops, the boar accidentally skewed you.
Can't imagine her on a boar hunt. Yeah. Well, actually, I probably could.
I could. She's probably one of the ones that like smear blood on their face. In the late 1930s, Eugene Box, who served as church official to St. Louis Cemetery No. 1 until 1924, discovered an old cracked copper plate in Alley 4 of the cemetery. The inscription on the plate read, "Madame Lalaurie, born Marie Delphine McCarthy, died in Paris December 7th, 1842, at the age of 6.
60-something.
Yeah, I guess the 6 was not there anymore. But according to French archives in Paris, Lalaurie died on December 7th, 1849, at the age of 62. So 7-year difference, same dates, 7 years difference. But she wouldn't have been in her 60s, 42. The original Royal Street mansion occupied by Lalaurie did not survive. The mansion, located on the corner of Governor Nichols Street, formerly known as Hospital Street, and commonly referred to as the Lalaurie or the Haunted House, is not the same building inhabited by Lalaurie. When she acquired the property in 1831 from Edmond Sonnet du Fosset.
Sounds good.
Sounds good enough. A house was already under construction and finished by Lalaurie. This house was burned by the mob in 1834 and remained in a ruined state for at least another 4 years. It was then rebuilt by Pierre Trastor after 1838 and assumed the appearance that it has today. Over the following decades, it was used as a public high school, a conservatory of music, an apartment building, a refuge for young delinquents, a bar, a furniture store, and a luxury apartment building.
Well, goodness gracious.
And that is the story of Lalaurie.
Evil biatch.
Evil. And never got justice. Unless she did get hit by a boar then.
The boar got her.
Yeah. Got you, bitch.
I cannot imagine dying.
A boar.
Wow. What an awful person. Sounded like she didn't need people to work for her. It sounded like she just needed people to torture.
Yeah. You're not really here to help. You're here for my sick pleasure. I'm glad her kids stood up to her.
Because they pretty much all stayed chained up.
So, I mean, there's not much they could have done. And how do you starve a cook? Like, that's really bad because you sit there and you see food all day long, but you can't eat it. Like, that's just...
Well, did she sit there and watch her the whole time? Sorry, I'd be sneaking it. I mean...
Maybe she had been caught one too many times and was just scared and, like, maybe I'll starve to death and won't have to get beat again.
She probably went in there and measured the soup in the pot. Oh,
probably so. It is 1/4 of a centimeter lower.
I'd have peed in the pot.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like, what's that show that she made her a pie and she pooped in it?
Oh, gross. I don't know.
The Help. It was called The Help.
The Help. I'm going to have to look into that.
Yeah. Minnie, I think. Miss Minnie was a maid.
That's so gross.
And she got fired for using, I don't know, like she got fired for using too many toilet paper tickets, you know? Like too much toilet
paper. Too much toilet paper on her bum?
Something like that. Or she did something that was...
I'm going to have to watch that.
It's funny? It's so good. It's heartbreaking and it's funny and it's, you know. But the girl, I can't think of the girl's name, but she wanted to write a book. She was a journalist and she wanted to do a book on, the,
you know, colored people working for white people, and like the wages and the hours and the couldn't use the bathroom in the house and had to take care of all the babies. And
oh, that's crazy.
Like, she was raised by a colored woman, and that was to her, her mom, her, like
they were,
yeah,
the nannies,
her mammy, you know? And I think anyway, she got fired. And so she went and made her a pie, and it was the best pie ever. Mm. And her secret was that she put shit in that pie.
She can eat shit and die. That's what she was thinking.
That's exactly what she was thinking.
All right. Well, that's all I have for this week.
Scary, spooky.
Yes. I would not want to meet
this
that
bitch. This was different. Yeah.
But for real, if y'all go to New Orleans, check it out. The French Quarter ghost tours are really cool.
Yeah, I would definitely do those. Mm-hmm. Even going to the cemetery.
Yeah, they have the cemetery tours too. Mm-hmm. The one that we went to was a walking. And we walked in like a big circle, and mm-hmm. there was a ton of different residents that had like lore and hauntings. And so it was really neat to hear mm-hmm. the history.
And I have done a couple of plantation tours too. And they're really, I mean, the houses are just absolutely beautiful, but there is like this eerie feeling that you get when you walk on the grounds and the
inside. It's almost like you always feel watched and just like not alone.
Yeah.
And not in a good way.
Yeah, not in a good way either. It's like, oh, I'm going to hold my pee for a while. I don't need to go to any bathroom.
Mm-mm, I'm good. Mm-mm. I heard what she did to the last person that used toilet paper. Ain't going to happen.
All right. Well, that is it for today. And we will see you next time with another crazy story and a crazy bitch who is unwell.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
We appreciate you listening to our podcast. If you liked it, please give us a good rating. You can listen on your favorite podcast platform with new releases every Friday. Just search for Bitch, I'm Not Well. Send us suggestions for an episode at b.tchimnotwell@gmail.com because Gmail won't let us use bitch. Or visit our website at www.bitchimnotwell.com. for more podcasts and our fabulous merchandise.
We'll see you next week on another podcast about another crazy bitch who is truly unwell.